growing kittens, they are very neophilic animals, and they are curious for new foods. And at this phase, it's important to feed the animals with different kind of foods, wet diets, dry diets, and different snacks or treats, for example, because they are experiencing different tastes and sensory aspects related to the foods. But when they become older, after 1 year old, for example, or more, they become more selective for foods.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young generation oral and gut health solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY technology. Research driven. Pet approved.
Well, welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast. I'm here with an expert on feline palatability. We're going to talk about it and try and understand it a little better today. I'd like to introduce Dr. Ricardo Vasconcelos, and my Portuguese is limited, but welcome. And why don't you give us a little background? You were telling me, I think the audience might be interested in your background to where you are today.
It's nice to be here with you, Dr. Dennis. I'm a veterinarian. I'm a Brazilian veterinarian. Graduated in Federal University of Viçosa in the southeastern of Brazil. And then I moved to Jaboticabal in São Paulo to perform my Master of Science and PhD degrees in cat and dog nutrition with Professor Carciofi. And I have some experience with a pet food company that I worked before I started here in the State University of Maringá. I worked in a pet food company for 2 years, and after I started my activities here in Maringá, in the south of Brazil. And here we have a facility for studies in cat nutrition, and especially we perform some trials with digestibility, palatability, and urinary pH, and other subjects and experiments related to the cat's health, especially for cats. We study.
For more than 20 years, Biorigin manufactures high-quality yeast-based ingredients through a sustainable biotechnological process, guaranteeing full traceability from the crop to the bowl. Through specialization in the fermentation process, Biorigin brings the right solution for specific nutritional, palatability, and health appeals, such as gut health, immune system, skin health, weight control, and more. Biorigin's products are natural origin, non-GMO, and certified sustainable by Bonsucro. Biorigin is your partner for high-quality, yeast-based ingredients to add value to pet foods worldwide. Learn more at biorigin.net.
Well, I'm very pleased to have you today. I think this is going to be an interesting discussion. I wonder if we could just start just the broad look. You know, what do you see as the sort of foundational characteristics of a food that influences the preference in cats? Let's just talk about the food, and then maybe we'll move on that to how we measure those preferences. But let's talk about food first.
As we know, cats are temperamental animals, and they are very selective animals for food, especially when we think in industrialized pet foods. Because as we know, cats in the present some specificities different from dogs, and they are more selective than dogs. Although they present a low amount of taste buds, for example, they present a lower amount of taste buds than humans. For example, we can compare humans present more than 2,000 taste buds, and cats present lower than 500 taste buds. But as we know, on the other hand, the smell is very important for dogs and also for cats. And cats present more than 10 times smell receptor than humans. And this characteristic is very important because they select the food first for the smell, and after they taste the food and continue or not to eating this food. And other important point that we need to consider for cats is that they present some difference between humans and cats. We have some difference in the taste receptors. For example, cats can feel the sour taste, the bitter taste, the umami, as we know, and also sweet taste. But for sweet taste, for example, they can feel the sweet taste, but related for the amino acids, not for sugars, for example, as we know for humans. And cats don't present taste buds for specific for salt flavor or taste. And because of this, we usually one strategy, for example, to improve the water consumption for some dry pet foods is to increase the amount of sodium chloride to intake more water and to decrease the density of the urinary density, for example.
The potassium chloride works along that same path as well.
Yeah, yeah. And as they are strict carnivores, for them, amino acids influence a lot the taste and the food consumption. And as we know, when the foods present higher amounts of protein, for example, they present a trend to consume more food. And other important point that we need to consider for cats is related to neophobia or neophilia. Sometimes we heard some people talking about the cats as a neophobic species. But we know that, in fact, cats are not neophobic animals.
Why don't you describe that? I do understand the word, but maybe not everyone's familiar with it. What do you mean when you say that?
Yes, neophilia is when the animal is curious for a new food, for a new kind of food, for example. And neophobia is related to the aversion of a new experience, for example.
The philia would be drawn to and the phobia would be stay away from.
Yes. For example, if you, for growing kittens, they are very neophilic animals and they are curious for new foods. And at this phase, it's important to feed the animals with different kind of foods, wet diets, dry diets, and different snacks or treats, for example, because they are experiencing different tastes and sensory aspects related to the foods. But when they become older, after 1 year old, for example, or more, they become more selective for foods. And if they they were not adapted for a wet diet, for example, if you try to offer when they are adult wet diet, it's possible that cats at the first time avoid the experience. Yes. So because of this, people believe they are neophobic animals, but in fact, they are not neophobic, but we need to adapt to them during the growing phase, especially.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit, because I think it's fascinating at sort of the science behind the measurement of this. If we define palatability, maybe let's start there and then move on to how would you measure that?
It's a hard task to develop the palatability tests because, as we know, the tests are a little subjective in our conclusion. But of course, we have many types of tests that give us different responses or different answers. The methods to evaluate the food preference and acceptability of foods, they are essential because, as I told you before, the palatability is the entrance of a commercial product in the owner's house. And many pet food companies present in their structure a facility to perform to evaluate the palatability of foods.
Well, it sort of seems like the consumer looks, and I'm not sure this is correct, but the consumer view might be how that palatability, that inherent, you know, attraction of the food to consumption, how that relates is sort of the outward sign of the quality of the food.
Yes. Not always high palatable food is a high nutritionally adequate food.
Candy bars come to mind, right? Very high pal, maybe not so high in quality of food.
Yes, yes, of course. We sometimes we have foods not so balanced, but they are very, they present high palatability, for example.
Yes, of course.
And usually the most common methods for the evaluation of palatability are based on the attractiveness of the cats and also the food consumption. The attractiveness is very important, not only for the cats, but also for the owners. But for cats, as we know, they present the smell receptor very developed, and we need to test for this. And the methods to evaluate the palatability in cats are based on also acceptability or preference. For example, what's the difference of acceptability or preference tests? Acceptability tests are considered monadic tests.
So just one bowl, just one option.
Yes, we offer only one food per time for the cats, and we can measure some aspects related for this food, like frequency of food intake, the energy intake, if this energy metabolizable energy intake was or not enough to supply the nutrient requirement of the animals. And we can measure the kinetics of the consumption and also some hedonic parameters that are related to behavior that show us how much they are liking this or they are loving to consume this food. And the acceptability tests are very important because they simulate better the condition, the housed condition of the animals. But of course, usually, when a pet food company is developing a new product or when they need to improve the quality of some specific product, the preference tests are very important because we can, by preference tests, compare A to B, by the way of Thibault method.
Yeah, tell us about that method, because there's some science still, just in you have two bowls for the cat to consume, but how do you place them, and how do you put a statistical evaluation? Because you want to say with some assurance that, you know, food A is better than food B. So how does that work?
Yes, usually the main measurement that is performed in the preference test by Thibault method is the intake ratio. Intake ratio is the ratio of food A or B that is consumed by the total amount of food consumed. And so we conclude that the animals preferred A or B instead B, for example. But the result, we need to be cautious, because sometimes, for example, the food A is preferred for the B, but not means that the food B is bad food for the cats.
But no, of course, maybe. Like in your example, it may be the company's previous food, which they already know is highly acceptable in the marketplace and people love it. Their question, they come to you probably saying, did I make it better? You know, is this improved? Yeah. Right? Yeah. They want to make it better. And this is a test they would use to evaluate that, I think.
Yes, this test present to us very valuable results. And recently, we finished an experiment here that we evaluate the animals for preference tests. It's very important that the animals present a normal behavior, that the cats are calm and safe to choose the food. Animals that present some problems of behavior, they can present laterality.
Yeah, not the test for them, right? That pet shouldn't be used here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last type of preference test that we can perform that is increasing year after year is the in-home panels of animals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The in-home panels are very important because they can simulate, or they can put the animals in the real condition. And this is important because we can test a food in a real condition in a panel of animals that are no experts,
right,
in trials, yeah, like we have in laboratory conditions.
Yeah, it's much more of a population that's going to be fed. Now, would that be the monadic one bowl test, or is it more like the two bowl test you were describing if you go to the in-home panel?
Yes, we can develop both methods by in-home approach, but we recently finished an experiment by two bowls method, and we compared the result with the laboratory.
Interesting.
Yes, and the results were very interesting and showed us, as we heard and as we read before, when we perform some tests by in-home panel of animals, is important to increase the number of animals because they are not so sensible by choosing the right food, and so it's important to increase the amount, the size sample, the sample size that we use.
Tell me about that. If you had 20, is that a good number for in laboratory tests? 20, maybe 25. How many would you want in home?
For laboratory animals, we have some papers recommending from 30 cats or more, but we performed a study here in our condition, in our lab, in 2020, and we published this data that we had a result that 20 animals with as they were trained, the result was enough, and we had high confidence with this result. We compared 10, 20, 30, and 40 animals in the same trial, and 20 animals was enough to get reliable results. But when we use only cats or dogs, the recommendation is more than 50. Some papers recommend more than 100 animals. But of course, in my opinion, depending on how these animals are trained or not, and we can train also the animals at in-home panel.
So I have a scientific question for you. Does training bias the answer?
Yes.
It makes it better, right? So you train and you reduce the variation, but your goal is to not also impart an answer to that.
We don't know because we can lose we can lose the real condition. Yeah. In this case, of course, I agree.
That sounds very interesting. Have you ever had any others? Like I once played with the idea, and I actually never did it, trying to figure out if I could get a cat to work for food, you know, touch a lever a number of times or something, because they're trainable. And then the more they touched it, the more they'd like it. I've never done that. But what would you think about something like that as a – because there's some foods we're going to talk about later where maybe I don't want them to eat a lot of food. I want them to control their weight, but I really want them to like it. So the magic food would be, I really like it, and then I'm done, you know. But I'm not sure how to measure for that. What do you think?
Yes, these tests, some tests based on cognitive results and cognitive palatability trials were developed for some researchers in Canada and United States. And also we have other similar tests based on the a real... these tests can measure how much the cat really like these foods, because they training before the cats for choose A or B or C food that they are comparing. And after training, the cats can show what food they prefer. And this type of tests are important, because usually you don't have the effect of satiety in the animals, because usually by preference tests we offer A and B, and we allow the cats to intake.
You can run that test A and B and stop it when calories allowed are done. Or you can just say either one you eat gets all the calories you want.
Yes, they can take more than they need. And by tests based on the behavior in trained animal for this is important, because they really show us what food they prefer, and without overconsumption.
If you were to summarize, let me try and say back to you, I said, this is actually a fairly scientific and complicated assessment. It is some ways simple. You could put in the monadic and say, observe the cat, how does it feel? But the things like meal size, meal number, times of approach, the A versus B comparison. And then that last one was fascinating, to get the cats to almost give us a human-like answer. I really like this food. Those are complex things, aren't they?
There are many approaches, and there are other types of tests. For example, some papers described a human panel of people trained to understand why the cats preferred food A or B, for example, based on the sensory capacity of we have. And we have many types of tests. And of course, usually we need to understand better the
Always that behavior. Science for you, right? One thing we haven't talked about is sort of the what I would call friability or that crunchiness of that consuming. I think you know, pets and especially cats perhaps have a preference for that. Is that something you've experienced? What do you feel about it?
Yeah, well, for example, today more than 90% of pet food, complete diets for dogs and cats, are dry kibble diets. And for this type of diets, is very important the crushness and the hardness of kibble. And cats, for example, like foods with crunchiness, but without too much hardness. Because, for example, when we most of that of dry diets are produced by extrusion process.
Yes.
And extrusion promotes two types of energy. Thermal energy that is applied in the conditioner by steam, addition and water addition, and also the mechanical energy in the barrel, in the barrel of extruder. When we use a lot of mechanical energy to produce foods for cats, the hardness becomes too high, and they have problems to consume the foods. And it's very important to use during the processing the thermal energy in higher amount, and also the mechanical energy, but not in excess, because we have problems with the food consumption. The same formulation can present problems in the food consumption for cats if we use a lot of mechanical energy, for example.
That sort of makes sense as a person who enjoys to eat. And, you know, I know you can make a good cake or a cake that's maybe not so tasty with the same formula. How you make it matters, right, is what you're telling us for cats too. I wonder if we could talk a little bit now. We've sort of talked about, you know, the characteristics and how we measure it, but you know, we kind of haven't talked about additives. You know, there's things we can put in cat food they like, right? Can you talk about them a little bit?
Additives are very important to promote palatability, especially, of course, for industrialized pet foods, wet diets or also dry diets. And usually cats like foods more acidic. The sour taste for them is very important. And for example, some organic acid can promote and the food intake of cats. And of course, we have the palatants. Palatants are hydrolyzed protein in a liquid or dry form, mixed with some acids, substances like phosphoric acid or other acids, to acidify to decrease the pH of these additives, and also by inclusion of some yeast extracts or brewer's yeast that cats loves yeasts and dogs also, and also some phosphate derivatives that can improve the palatability for cats. So there are many ingredients and additives that can improve the palatability for cats, but also we have, on the other hand, other substances that can
reduce the palatability, right?
Yes, related to palatability. Yeah, of course.
Oh, I was just going to ask because it fascinated me. So if you have these two sides, is there quite a bit of skill of saying, I've got this problem, I want this specific solution, maybe this particular yeast or this particular, liver chop that deals with that particular problem. Is that something you can do?
Many times people usually to believe that if cats loves palatants or yeasts and phosphates, I can put a lot of in food and they will eat a lot. But this is not true, of course. Usually some ingredients or additives can in excess can decrease the food consumption. For example, palatants.
Even though at the right amount, it's a positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand.
Yes. And for example, food palatants, if we use a low amount, they don't present a result that we can get. But on the other hand, if you use in excess, the cats and dogs can avoid to consume the food because they become worse. Okay.
Well, you can imagine for us, right, we might like a little bit of sweet, but if it was all sweet, we might go, maybe not the same.
Yeah.
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 Well, I wonder, if that's kind of additives, it sort of runs to a question we were chatting about before we started, which I have sort of opinions on, but I express them, right? So you can have a very palatable candy bar that's not a complete food. So palatability and nutritional adequacy are not necessarily tied, but how is that your experience? How do you feel about those two? On the one hand, the optimum nutrition, on the other hand, the very best taste. How are they related?
Yes. As we know, many ingredients can promote palatability for dogs and cats. For example, dogs and cats like animal lipids for lipid source from animal origin. But on the other hand, if we use a lot of to increase the energy, the metabolizable energy of food by including a lot of fat in the formulation, for example, we can decrease the food consumption and we can have problems with the nutrient requirements for amino acids, vitamins, and other nutrients, for example. And of course, sometimes we have a diet formulated by low digestible ingredients like wheat meal, for example, or other vegetable byproducts.
Maybe high fiber ones, less digestible because they're high fiber.
Yeah, of course. But if we use palatable ingredients and additives, we can increase the food consumption, but without nutritional adequacy, for example. So today, companies are needs to think in the R&D process to develop food, thinking in nutritional adequacy, palatability, and also today they are worried about the sustainability, for example.
Oh, let's talk about that. Yeah, so I think everyone is concerned, and pet foods kind of lives in a strange space, right? Because we take a lot of products that humans don't want, but yet sometimes we're kind of in there where we're competing with the human food chain for a product. So how does sustainability even work with palatability or in general with pet food for as you see it?
Yes, pet food, some people trying to believe that diets produced for cats and dogs are non-sustainable diets because they have a lot of protein. Of course, in part, it's true. We need to balance more the amino acids in the diet than to include a high amount of protein. But usually, especially in dry pet foods and sometimes also in wet diets, we use a lot of byproducts from slaughterhouses, like animal meals, for example, for dry foods. We use as the main protein sources the poultry byproduct meal, fish meal, meat and bone meal. And these those ingredients are very important because they represent circular economy of foods. And it's important to include those ingredients in diets for dogs and cats because we can avoid to for the a destination of these residuals for the landfilling or incineration or other.
Yeah, or fertilizer, you know, whatever could be used that's not edible.
And because of this, they are important. And of course, cats usually loves the poultry fat, for example. Usually the main fat source used in dry products is the poultry fat, and usually we compared some years ago many different fat sources for cats, and they well accepted many sources, but poultry fat was the preferred source.
Still preferred.
Yes, and they didn't like so much the soybean oil.
But cats don't like plants? Go think about it.
Like, yeah,
well, I should say, you know, I've fed a lot of plant products very successfully to cats, but I used to joke because I lived in an agricultural area that, you know, when my cat went out into the wheat field, she wasn't hunting wheat, you know.
But interesting, for example, I told you about the soybean oil. But today, some pet food companies are developing palatants from soybean, hydrolyzed soybean. And this is important because we can include some sustainable and vegetable sources in a diet for carnivoral species like cats, for example.
Because carnivore, really, from a nutritional perspective, what they need are the nutrients contained in meats. So it's not necessarily that they can tell the difference between arachidonic acid that comes from a chicken or arachidonic acid that comes from a test tube. They need arachidonic acid. You know, and obviously lots of carnivores, you know.
We need to think in nutrients, not in ingredients.
Oh, I'm quoting you. I agree exactly, yes.
Yeah, well, okay.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin Nutrisurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition, we partner with a purpose. ICC Animal Nutrition, a Brazilian company with 30 years of history and present in more than 70 different countries, providing natural, sustainable, and technological solutions for animal nutrition, health, and well-being in a safe and scientific way, adding value in food production and helping to feed the world.
I've enjoyed you. I think you've taught us a lot about palatability and how it relates to cats. If you were to talk to a student maybe that's hearing this and you want to tell them a little bit about why they might be interested in a career in this area or what you would like to see in a person you want to work with, could you just take a minute and tell us about that kind of makeup of perhaps you see in your students that you find really positive or what you'd like to see in a person you want to work with? That I always like that, just a personal question about how do you see that?
We here in Brazil usually we work in many subjects in cat and dog nutrition at the same time. But of course, one line of research that we have here is developing by in-home panels of animals for palatability trials, and also by developing new ingredients for cats, and as Brazil is an important country in the animal and vegetable production. We have many byproducts and co-products from the industries, and usually we perform many research together, the industry to develop new ingredients, for example. And other important fact that we have for pet food is the shelf life, and especially for palatability also. And we have some studies with shelf life, especially related to the natural antioxidants or synthetic antioxidants or processing animal meals and stability during the shelf life. But this is very important to produce pet food with higher shelf life and also stability of nutrients, because during the shelf life we have loss of important nutrients like vitamin A, vitamin D, E, and fatty acids, and it's important to know how much these products are protected from against the oxidation.
So as the oxidative byproducts go up, is that coincident with change in palatability, or does palatability, I would guess it might even happen before that. Those cats are probably pretty sensitive to small changes that maybe even don't seem to matter that much, you know, objectively as they start to go rancid. I mean, once they're rancid, everybody's going to hate it, but...
It's interesting. In 2017, we developed a small research here that we oxidized a poultry fat, and we include this poultry fat oxidized in different concentrations in a diet for cats. And the peroxide value was from 1 millequivalent per kilogram of fat to 15 millequivalents.
Okay. So even 15 is not terrible, right? It wasn't 25.
It's normal in some... here in Brazil, usually pet food companies use as the safe upper limit 10 millequivalents.
Okay.
But the result was very interesting. Cats preferred the diet with 1 mil equivalent of peroxide. But if we offered only in the acceptability test the 15 mil equivalent of peroxide, they eat also normally.
Yeah, so it wasn't so terrible they'd starve to death.
Yes, yes.
Because I'm not sure humans would have that same reaction. I've heard, and I don't have this actual things, but that some of our tastes get acclimated to a slightly rancid taste. So like maybe we might like a little bit of that rancidity in a potato chip because we're used to it. Or I don't know. What do you think? Is it like cats like people or different?
Yes, I'm very sensible to feel oxidized products when I buy. But in this case was interesting because we reported that they are sensible, but in a comparative way. But if we offer food with high amount of peroxide, for example, they also can they also eat. Of course, we are not stimulating to produce this.
You're
kind
not
of
advocating
food.
For that, right?
Because the fatty acids are oxidized
food.
Here. But in a recent, for example, when a fat source becomes oxidized, usually the volatile compounds like hexanol, decadienol increase over time. And this year, we finished many trials with some ingredients by related to the palatability, and we observed that the concentration of some volatile compounds like aldehydes were related to the food consumption of cats in the palatability trials also. So we don't know how much this substance can interfere in the food consumption of the animals, increasing or decreasing. Of course, we need to study more this subject.
Well, thank you. This has been a very interesting segment, and I've sure felt like you've taught us a lot about palatability and how to measure it, what it means. So thank you. Hopefully we can get this out, and maybe if you want sometime later, we can come back and do a little deeper dive, because each one of these areas really could be discussed even more deeply than we've done today.
Yeah.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.